Welcome to Star of the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SAB Online, Bedcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday, and I start at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. This follow directions, the call is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for Quality 17702 or SFU On Call. You will hopefully find us there. And of course, if you want to, you can also listen to us or watch us on the Twitch site, twitch.tv. Just go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call and you will find us there. Now, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is also sfuoncall. I got a personal account there on Paul Franz. That's PAUFRNZ. If you don't like a couple of things, I am proud of being Catholic and an Orioles fan, and I love tech. So if one of those things bothers you, don't follow me. And of course, I have a tertiary account called Franz Games, which announces news when it comes to client updates and other things that are happening in Franz Games, including Starfleet Warlord stuff. Some quick, just a reminder, this lovely talkcast gets turned on podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week, which is pretty slim in the pickings. Just a reminder that you have the GURPS Klingon update that they did last week. And also, of course, that this upcoming week, you should see new Shapeways minis. Moving onward to the Sapphire Star 7 tournament. Round 1 has already got 6 out of the 8 games completed, which is awesome to see. also, a reminder that there actually is a YouTube channel on the on YouTube site. Just look for Starfleet Universe On Call, and you should be able to find me. Don't ask me for the YouTube URL because it's basically youtube.com/TheAndromedan. I haven't figured out I can't really get the unique name, you know, way I want it until I get a certain number of followers and subscribers, and I am not there yet. So at the moment, I've just got that one. And just a reminder of certain things when it comes to the online client. There's many, many things that were released this week with update 4.3. There are multiple issues that were fixed. They're fixed with issues not being placed on the board. There was an issue with selecting a filter when pieces are selected and it just going wonky. So that issue is now fixed. So as a fix to default, there's many fixes for the tools to help the people who are helping to fix the definitions when those errors are found. Also to work on anything new that might be coming up, including maybe some new fighter definitions, which would be quite cool. What was authenticated mode is now called single player mode. Thank you. I think it was either Rush or Dave. I can't remember who gave me that name using single player mode. Which was a great way of describing it. It's exactly what I wanted to describe it as, because basically in single player mode, you are a single player. You don't interact with anybody. You're not on. It's required that you be online because that's how you access the ships and the game rooms and all of that. but you can't chat with people. That's why it's single. That is why it's called single player mode. And also it's some trimming of the menus, got rid of some features which I felt like people were not using. Also, I modified the map so that you can now just click and drag, and that will move. It will move the board around, move the map around, so you can see the different ships, which I think people will enjoy a heck of a lot better than using the scroll bars. I've removed the option to use the scroll wheel on the mouse for the scroll bars, because I didn't feel like that really was consistent with the way to use things. So I removed it, so the scroll wheel on a mouse, it can only be used for zooming in and out. So for those people who like using it for scrolling the actual board, sorry. You know, I felt like it was better just to do click and drag, which I think people would appreciate. It's a reminder that previously click and drag created a selection rectangle. It's now you're required to hold down the shift key to create that selection rectangle. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one of the old Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Barry, we've got Dave, and oh my, we have Gary. How you doing, guys?
Hey there. Hello.
It's awesome to have you both on. Have not had that happen for quite a bit.
Yeah. Hello, Gary. Haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I wanted to call in because I don't know if you've been keeping tabs, but there's actually quite a lot going on with ADB lately. I don't know if you had time to go over any of it before we get into whatever you actually had planned for tonight.
Are you talking about the schedule that ADB posted last week? Or are you talking about something else?
Well, there's a few things
that I might have missed.
There's the two F&E products that are the counter sheets are going through their prep paces. There's the one for F&E Civil Wars that's going to introduce the Wind Cluster and the Romulan and Civil War and the War of Return with the Xintis and so forth and the Lyrans too. And there's also going to be the new counter sheets for F&E Tactical Operations, which is going to add in a whole bunch of ships like X-ships and new battleships and so forth, whatever, for a host of different empires and so on.
Oh, awesome.
And there's also new Shapeways things, like the Hell Guardians from the Triangle Galaxy got added this month, along with a couple of earlier ships for the Carnivons. And there's been PDF uploads for things like Captain's Log 49, which has a cover story that you may or may not be interested in. And there's also the 2021 edition of GURPS Klingons was uploaded. And soon we're going to see the upload to Module R4T, the PDF. That's going to be basically a whole bunch of new ships for the Tholians,
right?
Both in the home galaxy and here. And there's a bunch of other stuff that's slipping my mind right now. But just a few of those things, you know, just I don't know if you've covered them in recent
episodes. No, I've not covered them. And some of those I completely and utterly missed. I'm willing to bet some of those were on the big post that Steve Cole did last week, which I missed until after the show. Because Steve Cole used to make it easy for me. Previously, they would do an automated post to they had a blog, I think Federation Commander of Blogspot, and they stopped doing that many, many months ago. And I used to be able to easily get information from that. And now, you know, I was like, okay, I'm not exactly sure where to get the information from. You know? Some of the stuff I get from Facebook, some of the I get from the discussion board, you know, it's just all over the place. So it makes it harder to report on stuff when I don't know where to get it. You know? But anyhow. Was there any particular topic that you guys wanted to discuss? Because I was struggling for a topic myself.
Well, sadly, I'm pretty sick right now, and I'm like tired beyond belief. So I know I'm here, but I'm not going to be able to hang on too much longer. So I'm probably not the one to set the topic.
Okay.
Well, I can help you with that then. Well, not with the getting better, aside from just wishing that you get better. But topic-wise, I'd very much like to pick apart some of these new things that are happening.
Okay.
Steve Cole has been posting countersheets, like work-in-progress countersheets for both the Civil Wars and tactical operations, as well as notes about some of the scenarios. Like, at least one of there's going to be like formal... a template, you know, to basically show like how you deal with trying to invade the wind cluster in F&E terms. And although it hasn't been fully formalized yet, like they've basically just been showing like a rough outline as to what you might expect. And then there's probably going to be a war of return scenario in Civil Wars.
Oh, cool.
So that all those new wind cluster ships can be used.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think one thing that I think is interesting, because I'd been hoping for a long time that tactical operations would basically work as a support project for the Andromedan War, because we have to wait and see, because like ISC War, when that came out back in 2010, like, or not 2010, 2010 was when they did the most recent F&E core rulebook update. ISC War is a couple of years later, but that product only has ISC ships, but they've got like a really big fleet, so they needed all that space. And that's even just their peacetime fleet. That's not including any of their wartime stuff that they built when the invasion happened. But even they get a few new ships in Tac Ops. But Andros, I guess we'll have to wait and see. Like, will Andromedan War have only Andro ships, or will it also throw in a bunch of the ships, like the ISC wartime ships or whatever, that other empires use to fight against them? So that kind of decision, I guess we'll have to wait and see. Like, it's probably one of those things where, like, when they ever sit down and think, how many counters are we talking about? And then the answer will fall out of that. But in any case, it is good to see that the counter sheets that are being put together are limited to ships that entered service before the invasion began. So basically, Y-187 or before. Which still includes a lot of ships that become important during the war, such as the many of the X-Raiders that were in Module X-1R. Like,
right.
You may recall in podcast past, we were speaking about X-1R, about how it includes ships like the Federation ship Colin Powell that has it's like a modified version of the X-Technology Galactic Survey Cruiser, but it's got six F-111s as well. So that's actually a pretty good ship to go hunting.
No kidding. Those F-111s are big fighters.
And then for example, the Romulans have a similar ship. They have a Firehawk EX called the Admiral Sentius. So it's pretty good for hunting. And that's actually going to be, I think the GVX is already in advanced operation, so it doesn't need a new counter. But the GSX is going to get its first counter for F&E in this product, along with
great
ships like the Firehawk EX. And there's going to be a bunch of other XPFTs and so forth that are going to be in it, but also ships that can be useful both for the general war and for the ISC pacification. So they're basically in the process of putting together, and also they're going to include a bunch of mission variants for the various heavy war destroyers. So not the advanced technology ones, they're going to have to wait until Landro War. But the non-advanced technology heavy war destroyers, like if you want to have a dedicated counter for like a fast patrol ship variant, or in the case of the Federation, it's a little bit, because a couple of years back, I was asking on the BBS about what the Feds can do, because like the heavy war destroyers, the advanced technology ones that are in X1R, if they are to be sent to hunt RTN nodes, they can be set up as fast patrol ship tenders. So basically, the you've still got the heavy fire, the heavy weapons that the base hold has, and you've got a bunch of PFs, and you've got the scanning equipment, so you can try to hunt down the satellite bases and stuff if you need to. But the feds, unless in the standard timeline, they don't have the PFs to do that. So what they can do instead is, because ordinarily a Federation heavy war destroyer can take a squadron of six F-111s, and they can put those on external mech links, kind of like a PF mech link, but for fighters instead. So, but the rules actually allow a heavy war destroyer to take less than the full squadron of heavy fighters. So, but what the feedback from that was, from ADB, was that you can actually give a Federation heavy war destroyer four F-111s and two special sensors in the weapon option mounts, and use that to go hunt Andromedans, like if you wanted to. So in F&E terms, that's been, or it's in the process of being formalized as the HDWZ variant. So people can use it now as like a raiding ship, like before the invasion begins. But when the time comes for Andro War to be done, that variant will basically give Federation players more flexibility, if not quite the same as the fast patrol ship variants that other Empires have to hunt the RTN. But the thing is that the Feds do actually have things like the GSXs and the GVX, which are themselves beyond what most other Empires have to hunt the Andromedans. So.
Wow. I'm sorry, just an HDW with four F-111s. Yikes.
Yeah, so...
That sounds very dangerous.
Because the thing is that in SFB terms, a heavy war destroyer that is being set up as a fast patrol ship tender, you would install the special sensors into the heavy weapon option mounts.
Right.
And you would turn four of the non-weapon option boxes into PF mech links. But then, because you know that there's the mech link refit that most Empires have.
Right.
So what you're actually doing is that to get PF 5 and 6 on there, you're refitting the standard ship's tractor beams to become PF mech links. So then you can carry the full flotilla of 6-foot gunboats. But the Federation don't have that. They can't basically do an F-111 mech link refit. That's not allowed.
Right.
That's why you would have to basically cut the squadron down from six to four in order to fit the sensors. But that's still good in terms of like if you're trying to pick off a satellite base or maybe even a slightly bigger station. But, if you run into a battle station with two Dominators parked in it, then you're probably in trouble. So.
Yeah, it's battle station, no. And then HW... with Ford F-111s? No, I don't think so.
Although, the handy thing about X-ships is that because the Andromedas don't have phaser fours, and so the temporal elevator. The temporal elevator, it doesn't extend the range of the Andros weapons. It basically reverse extends the protection range, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of RTN hunting, like an X ship doesn't necessarily, because it can basically, as long as it stays in the vicinity of the base, it doesn't actually have to get close enough to engage it. It just has to stay locally enough, close enough to stop the Andros from moving the base and far enough away so that any supporting ships can't destroy it before reinforcements come to help wipe out the base. So,
right, but also at that point. Right, but at that point, you're mainly talking about strategic level versus tactical level at that point.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to see like what happens there. But actually, the Civil War stuff is pretty interesting too, because it's going to come with counters, alternate color counters for the Romulans, so that you can play the Rolandus' Civil War properly. And it's going to come with alternate Gazinti color counters, so that you can play it with a War of Return. Sorry, are you okay?
Yeah, as I said, sick.
Mm-hmm. But, so basically it's going to let you do that. And then the Lyrans are going to get alternate rebel colors as well, so that you can play things like the various wars surrounding the LDR. So what you could do is that, in theory, you could take the LDR counters that are in FNE Minor Empires, mm-hmm. and then combine them with the regular Lyran counters and the rebel Lyran counters to basically cover some of those like internecine battles that allowed the LDR to exist.
Interesting. That's actually going to be quite cool because of... did they release a product for Civil Wars? I forget. For FNE.
Well, this is it. Basically, this is actually it happening because the actual products will be a little bit later in the year, but the counter sheets have to be done sooner. So the actual, like... The pluses and minuses of the scenarios can wait, but... Because they need to basically, as in previous years, they need to print all of the different counter sheets for a bunch of new products all at once. So they're also going to print counters for Module R4T and also for a thing called Module R4J, which is going to be Shadow of the Eagle. That's basically going to be an alternate timeline where the Romulans succeed in developing proper warp drive by themselves.
Yeah, I heard that mentioned as.
Sorry, excuse me.
That's okay. I didn't read that much into. I think I saw someone post about that, a mention of it. I didn't see any real discussion on it.
Well, there is a pair of sample SSDs for Shadow of the Eagle that are in Captain's Log 54. So there's one for a warp refitted era ship and one for an earlier ship. So people can have a look and see what that's like. But actually, one thing that's interesting is that because usually SFB counters or Federation Commander counters are only one side. But because they're being printed at the same time as the FNE counters, they're going to be double-sided anyway. So what they're going to do is they're actually going to print the op-back the reverse side of each of the Romulan counters for module for the Stellar, the R4J, are going to have the rebel colors that are going to be used for FNE Civil Wars. So it'll make it easier to do Civil War scenarios with those, you know, what if ships.
Yeah. But the one.
Hey, guys, I'm going to call it a night.
Okay.
All right.
Barry, you get well. Okay.
Bye. Best of luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, the only issue I have with double-sided counters at all, I understand, perfect opportunity. It's actually a great idea to have it so they have both counters with the different sides, basically, of the Civil War on the opposite sides of the counter, which is wonderful. I think it's really a cool idea. The concern about that, because I know I've seen this in FNE counters before, which is, of course, making sure that both sides line up. I'm not sure when the last time they actually had FNE counters printed up, and whether the technology itself, when it comes to doing those double-sided counters, they improved over the years or not. But I would hope they have. You know, because I know that was a quality control issue that ADP has had in the past.
Well, that's why Steve Cole's been posting the work in progress pictures of the counter sheets for both TAC Ops and Civil Wars, front and back. Mm-hmm. So people can actually go right now into those BBS threads and they can see for themselves if there's anything that looks a bit unusual, and they can, you know, put in a suggestion in the discussion thread, like, oh, by the way, I spotted this. So if there is anyone who's not already, you know, combing through the both sides of the counter sheets to double check and make sure everything's okay.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
They probably want to do it soon, because I don't think it's going to be much longer before they actually send them the print.
Oh, understood. I'm just pointing out the manufacturer, the printers themselves. In the past have had issues with getting it so that that both sides line up is the big issue.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Well, hopefully things will be okay this time around. But
Understood. And as I pointed out, I'm not sure if they've got any, if the technology when it comes to doing double-sided counters has improved over the years, because I'm not sure when the last time, because all F&E counters are double-sided. At least most of them. I think the only ones that might not be are fleet counters, and I'm not sure about that. Because it's been years since I've actually looked at F&E counters, but I know that for F&E counters, on one side is a normal ship, and then on the other side is, I think, where it's crippled.
The only difference is for police ships, because except for the LDR, they don't count as regular fleet units, so you only get them until they're crippled, and then I guess they go back to the police or whatever. So, for example, if you see a Federation POL, you'll get it until it's crippled, and then it goes away. Mm-hmm. But yes, most other empires, they have the crippled factor as well.
Right. And yeah, so the F&E count has always been double sided, and I know, as I said in the past, they've had issues with quality control and having it so that when they're cut out, that they on the one side, that on the other side they're cut out properly. You know, because if it's not lined up, at least close enough, you have, you're clipping off part of the counter on the backside. You know,
I think the most recent batch was done back in 2016, because then they did a revised version of Fighter Ups, and then they also did mm-hmm. Minor Empires, which introduced the Zeltorians, the Vudar, and the LDR. Seemingly there's been no. I haven't seen any complaints about them, but hopefully that means that there aren't any to complain about, rather than it just not become public or whatever. But
I just think about a lot of F&E players who love their counters. Was it Tony Thomas? Was it? I think it was. Who basically said that he doesn't count the number of counters, themselves, the number. He actually counts the weight. So I forgot how many pounds of counters he has. Being an F&E player and having like every single counter in the book possibly double or tripled, because you never know. You can never have too many counters. When you're trying to build, especially in F&E, when you're trying to build. Certain ships, if you don't have enough counters, then it makes it hard to build that ship. You have to say, oh, this counter, that represents this ship, which gets confusing.
And also, I mentioned that on Shapeways, we've now got the first Carnivon ships. Now, interestingly enough, the first ships that were uploaded this month, just a couple days ago, actually, are earlier ships, so it's the but they haven't yet uploaded the ones for module C6, but I guess supposedly they're on the way. I'm not sure about that, but you can see basically the design is influenced by the Carnivon ship on the front cover of module C6 itself. So kind of like how the Paravian ships, they look like the one that's on the front of C6 as well, rather than looking like a line art.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, I don't know if you want to pop onto the Shapeways and have a quick look there.
Yeah,
but also, if you're wildly Shapeways, you can see the Hell Guardian ships as well. So that's the introduction to the Triangle Galaxy into the Shapeways storefront as well.
Yeah, I see them. Oh, those are neat ships. I forget what galaxy they are. Are they part of the Tholian?
The Hell Guardians, they're Triangulum.
Triangulum, okay, Triangulum. Wow. Haven't heard...
Yeah,
discussion about the Triangulum for a while.
Yeah, those are the guys that have the rotary shields. So they're not as good as the shield, the rotating shield on a Juggernaut, but they usually have basically two 6-box, or if you reinforce 10-box, mini shields that you can rotate and put into different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So, but their regular shielding is weaker than average to compensate for that.
That's so weird. I'm looking at the ISC Light Tactical Transport, which is, that does look so freaking weird. Because you got the ISC ship, and then you have this this tube coming out the middle of it. It's just so weird. Okay, I was going back and looking at some of the older ones, like the police ship, which looks like, you know, well, I expect the Federation police ship, police frigate to look like. But yeah, you know, I like the Helgarnians. Those look kind of cool.
Yeah, so they, I mean, historically wise, they're pretty interesting too, because most of the Triangle Empires, they start off with early years ships, and then they refit the ships to the modern era and then upgrade the weapons and stuff. But the Helgarians already have modern warp engines, but they still have like early years like weapons. So, for example, they can't overload their hybrid weapons and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically end up having to accelerate their development to try to keep pace with the younger empires, like springing up all around them.
Yeah, actually, do you know if there's been any discussion about the Triangulum product? Because if I recall correctly, it was still in playtest. I forget. It was an E.
Yeah, there's
it was an E module, right?
There's three empires, including the Helgarians, in module E2. And then there's a fourth playtest empire called the Imperium that's in Captain's Log 23. And on the BBS, there's a link to a very substantial errata file that was posted back in 2011, revising, you know, updating the information for all four empires. But there's no word about them going any further anytime soon.
Okay, so...
Because the only thing as well is that, I mean, I was thinking about them for a Federation commander, and the rules for two of the empires, the Helgarians and the Imperium, aren't too difficult to figure out. But some of the errata, especially for the Arachnids, because the Arachnids have these kind of weird plasma-like torpedoes where it's like super complicated to try to arm them. But with the errata, they're also super weak as well. So it's like, what's the point? So you can't really convert them to FC until the SFB version has been fixed properly.
Right. Agreed. Yeah. My question when it comes to the Spider Empire in the Triangle Galaxy, if you happen to know anyway, which is with the weakening of the plasma torpedoes like weapon, does it kind of nerf them completely, or?
Well, I mean, it's
in your opinion anyway.
It seems that it's a very substantial drop, but it kind of feels that like the weapon was kind of over-egged in the first place. Like, I don't know if it, I mean, it's easy to, you know, what is it, that phrase that Americans use, Monday morning quarterback or something?
Yep.
But I know, I mean, it kind of feels like it's, I mean, even if it was working, an FC version would probably have to be much more slimmed down, because even for other things that are in FC relative to SFB, like, for example, Alpha Octane Plasma, there's the Federation Commander has bolts and carronades, but it doesn't have shotgun, it doesn't have enveloper, it doesn't have Sabo. Not even for X-ship, plasma X-ships, which is unfortunate, but it doesn't have like pseudos and so forth.
Right.
There's definitely plenty of precedent in terms of cutting some of the stuff back.
Right.
But actually, you know, I do think though that when I mentioned the Helgarians, that because in SFB, their shields are relatively weak. There's the questions about like whether or not like how much energy you need to spend in order to try to star castle or that sort of thing. But in FC, you can't really star castle properly anyway. So I don't know if they'd lose out quite so much in FC relative to SFB. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, the other empires have stronger shields, but they can't make them much stronger than they already are, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah. Dave was a fan of the Triangulum Galaxy, but I understand why they don't do more with them right now. You know, I still like to see them work on it, though. Obviously, they've got a plan for this year, at least the beginning of the part of the year. Anyway, and hopefully they can get through that without issue, because Lord knows, anyone who's watched ADB and the games, you know, they produce all the products that they have planned for the starting year, and how things end up just going out, you know, the schedule gets completely thrown out due of either medical issues or family issues or things like that, where, you know, that end up happening. Now, obviously, Steve Cole is in, I think, a lot better shape than he has been in the past. I'm not sure if that affects product that much. It might affect a little bit, because I know Gene basically is retired. She's working part-time now for ADB. So she's not doing the full-time thing anymore, which might require Steve Cole or some, or maybe they'll hire someone else to help out, where, you know, to take over what Gene was doing. Hopefully they can get the products that they said they have planned to get out this year, and not run into some of the issues they've had in the past.
Well, I mean, given the current situation with COVID-19, I suppose, you know, it's good that we're at least, you know, things are at an advanced stage with some of the products and stuff. There's definitely plenty of, reasons to be patient and so forth, but it looks like it'll be rewarded. So, I mean, it's always it's good to see things moving forward. And the PDF option's been going well. I mean, of course, I'm personally glad the Captain's Log 49 is out, but you basically see the front cover, then you might remember why that is.
Yeah.
But,
if I recall correctly, there's a certain person's name on that one, but yeah.
Well, there's a certain, empire that it's focused on that I think
yes.
you in particular might be interested
yes,
in.
Yes, I remember. It's definitely focused on the Andromedans. I know. If I recall correctly, that's the one with the history, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I thought I remember that right. But
I also mentioned that there's the PDF that's up for GURPS Klingons. I was actually looking through it, but I think I'm not too sure if they're like getting feedback. I'm going to upload it. That's usually what happens, but... I did notice, like, for example, it still has, in many places, it still has race instead of empire or species, whatever. But I don't know if that's something that's going to be picked up or not. But, I mean, the general gist of the fact that it's, although I will say that, it's a good product, but I think it's kind of almost like a shame that it was the first Empire source book to be released for GURPS Prime Directive, because GURPS Romulans came out after it, and I think it's a better product. And GURPS Federation came out after that, and I think it's the best one. So I don't know if that's particularly fair to GURPS Klingons and stuff, because it did, you know, lay the groundwork in terms of like how these things were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was a lot easier because, on the one hand, the Romulans, I mean, they don't really have a true subject species, and
right.
There's also the opportunity of telling the story of the exodus to Romulus and Remus, and also the fall and rise of the exiles in terms of turning into Romulans. So there's a lot more that they could do with them, whereas the Klingon book kind of had the juggle, like adding in all the extra stuff like the Junkars and stuff, whatever, and including a Vudar section, which still kind of basically, because at the time that GURPS Klingons was written, the Vudar version of history that was being presented. Now, in fairness, it wasn't the only one being presented, but the book basically follows the kind of propaganda version where the Klingons basically pretended that the Vudar had actually broken off and become independent. But the real version of history is that the Vudar are still, they're like a satrapy of the Klingon Empire. But the political fiction was basically a way to allow them to hang on to three Hydran provinces at the end of the war and not have that trigger another war in its place.
Right.
So what I actually think would be interesting is that if/when there's a chance to do more Empire source books, I think it would be interesting to basically group the Vudar together with the Hydrans and the Borak, maybe, and do call it, like, say, GURPS Rimward Empires. Because there's already been talk about a feline empire book that would do the Lyrans and Xintys and Carnivons. So there wouldn't be room for the Hydrans in that one. But if you put the Hydrans with the real Vudar and the Borak, I think that might be interesting. Because there already is Hydra material in GURPS Module Prime Alpha, but that's for like a previous edition of GURPS, so it's not necessarily up to date
right.
to the present. But it is stuff that could be built on in terms of expanding upon the Hydran Kingdom and adding in all these things that we know now about, like the Borak, for example. So.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Because actually, when you think about it, both the Borak and the Vudar, their existence or lack of is tied to an in-universe publicity stunt. Because the Borak were wiped from space in the early years, but the Hydrans pretended that they were real to try to prevent the Klingons and Lyrans from following them into the old colonies in Y-170.
Right.
Whereas in the same region of space, the Klingons pretended that the Vudar had broken off to basically stop the Hydrans at a certain distance from the old border.
Right. Crazy. And David, yes, I agree. I think Caps Log number 49 was better than Caps Log number 50. Just to point that out.
Well, 50 had those Osman Marauders, so I think that's good.
Yeah. Oh, agreed. I definitely, it was the Osman Marauders adding the filling in some of the gaps. Definitely was a big help, I think, when it comes to the Osman Marauders. Now, okay, the Osman Marauders are Omega, right? Just want to make sure.
Yep, and they're on Shapeways too.
Yep. I just want to make sure I'm remembering this right. Versus the pirates from the Falling of Galaxy, which I don't think they have a name.
They are also on Shapeways.
Which is interesting because those ships, I mean, we don't even have rules for them.
Oh, they do. They're in Captain's Log 40 for SC and for SFP.
Oh, okay.
And there's a blurb in CL-41 which explains the history behind them. So, because what it is okay, so you know the way in the Alpha Octant, you've got the irregular Orion pirate ships, which have all the cool tricks, like double, engine doubling and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the Wind Cluster Orion ships, which don't have those extra tricks,
right.
but they can still function as warships, and they can leave the cluster and go on missions if the winds need them to.
Right.
So
right.
in the M81 galaxy, the pirate ships that we have SSDs and ship cards for, they're like the Wind Orion ships in that they're missing some of the cool toys. But it's reversed because it'd be almost as if, imagine if the Winds were the ones who built the ships that could double their engines, but they exported the crappier version of the ship to the pirates.
Which that makes sense.
But the difference is that, because in M81, the main empire, or the main faction that supports the pirates, they're called the Nebulae. And they live, as the name suggests, inside nebulae. And nebula is actually the one place where web doesn't work very well. So the Nebulae version of the raider ship, which we don't know about yet because it hasn't been published yet, has rules, which we don't know about they do yet either, that supposedly allows it to have an advantage fighting in the nebula.
Right.
The pirate
like
versions
the
of the ships don't have those rules. Or like the, I was going to say, like the Kixa.
Oh, okay.
But yes, so I would be interested to see the nebula, like the proper Nebulae versions of these ships at some point. But long story short, the version that we know about and that people can play test, they're used by these groups called High Pirate Bands. And they even have, there's a PDF on the website that shows you the little logos that they use. And because when the Tholians were in charge, the logo was basically an arrow. And on the front of the arrow is a blackened eye of a Tholian. And the idea is that the Tholians are blind to the activities of the pirates. Hmm. And then after the revolt, the logo changes to the blind eye of a Saltorian.
Oh, jeez. Marketing-wise, that makes no sense when it comes to the pirates. Like, okay, they see that people see this new symbol. It's like, what? Wasn't that? Who are these guys? Are these a new set of pirates? You know.
Well, the thing about them is that we don't know what kind of species the Nebulon themselves are, but the high pirate bands who fly the OGR and OGD, they're made up of individual members of species that are subject to the Tholians and later on the Saltorians.
Right.
They're basically kind of like escapees. And actually, the Tholian Master Starship book goes into more detail because it gives you more information about what the Tholian economy looked like in the old galaxy. So, for example, if you look in the PDF that they have for the Master Starship book, which I think is going to be reflected by the SSDs that we're going to, and the material that's going to be in R4T, it actually gives you a lot of information in terms of, okay, so the Tholians themselves have these generic ships, and their subjects have these ships, and if the Tholians are using them, they have this, and if the subject species are using them, they have this. Like, for example, only the Tholians and Saltorians used arm shuttles in the Hun Galaxy. So a subject species, their shuttles have no phaser threes. And for example, like the Tholians themselves, they can use a couple of high-priority transports like to move, if a dignitary needs to move from one sphere to another. But things like bulk cargo ships, they're all crewed by the subject species, because that's like beneath the Tholian work. So it's like it's only in our galaxy that the Tholian holdfast had to basically go back to doing their own work in terms of mining asteroids and, you know, extracting resources and right. moving them around, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, previously it was completely done by the subject races.
And definitely if you have any interest in the Tholians, then the Master Starship book is pretty interesting, and I'm actually curious to see if they'll get around to a Saltorian Master Starship book as well, because I think between the two of them, they would basically provide a lot of information that could potentially make a future M81 module a lot more feasible, because they go a further towards making that galaxy functional, which is actually kind of funny, because when you think about it, aside from Andromeda, which we don't really know anything about, M81 is basically the first other galaxy other than the Milky Way in Starfleet Battles. it's been available to play in for 30 years, give or take, since Module C3 came out, or like 28 years, whatever it is. But even though Omega and the LMC and Triangulum came out afterwards, each of them is more functional, is in a sense more functional than M81 itself is.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you specifically focus on the revolt.
Right, right. Which I think, yeah, that's true. Because the revolt actually is obviously one of the more interesting parts of the Tholian history that's there. Of course, well, okay. I was thinking about that and I just realized that was kind of a dumb thing to say to a certain degree, because we don't know enough about the Tholian history to truly know whether that is the most interesting part. There might be other parts that are very interesting too, that we just don't know about that history yet. You know, because there might have been other revolts, but they were put down.
So actually, just while we're here, did you want to take a quick look at the most recent update post that Steve Cole posted, just to go through a few of the top headlines, or no?
Sure, sure. Okay. When did they post it, earlier this week?
I think that there was an update. It was like revised a couple days ago or so.
Okay. On what topic was that? Was it company?
I think there's a in about the company, I think there's a section that says project schedule updates or something like that.
Yeah, I see it. Okay, got it. Yeah. Okay. Steve Cole was saying one of you guys posted a link to the topic somewhere else resulting spam bot attack on the BBS, which I know that issue, which is you can't post links to the BBS. Internally to the BBS, because obviously you should be able to post links to the discussion board itself. You just can't post internal discussion board topics. That's when we run into issues with spam bots. Because in my mind, that the discussion board, the main discussion board, well, that automatically, you know, it's already available to anyone who wants to look at it just because it's on the main website. So, yeah, but okay. Back on Tuesday. And of course, on last Thursday was when he posted, you know, about the whole product schedule update. Whoa, what was that? SMB module X2 is a big one out there, but it's going to take a ton of work. We did abandon the idea of twice as much damage / half damage idea. But when I started building the X2 SSD, I got confronted with project going to press in more near terms I had to set aside for the moment. I've not abandoned it. If I cannot find a day for X2 in the gap between counters going to press and then back to the printers, I will try to find a day between F&E TAC Ops and Civil Wars. So there is hope, people. There is hope that we'll have a module X2. Moving to what you're talking about, Gary, that's counters and F&E expansions. Ooh, that's interesting. So this should be interesting. Because he's just mentioning that they're using a new die cutter that they've never used before, so that they have no experience with this guy. Experience with him is very limited, and we don't know his turnaround times. I sent him new FedCom maps to press on 27th of November, and we are scheduled to get them today. And we did, and they were...
Those did come in, and Gene was saying that they're really good, so...
Yeah. Which is good to hear. So that sounds like that we've got a good. It's brings, you know, hopes are good, you know, confidence is high. Kind of get it back. Then I assume that the day I send these new counters to press, let's say Monday on the 8th. Starts a ticking clock of themselves due to arrive around April 8th, plus or minus 10 days. That would be counter day. So they plan on getting, so they still have 4 more days, and then they plan on, and this was Tuesday. Okay. We'll make sure that was relatively recent when it comes to quoting dates, because otherwise, roll the dice and add. Okay, so Steve Cole is saying basically the two F&E expansions should not ship at the same time, which I can understand because he doesn't want the players as it would be a lot of money for players to spend. Basically, he's trying to even out when people spend money on new products, i.e. that they might buy one and then buy the other later on because of the cost of the products, which Lord knows we know how expensive games can be. So it makes no sense to put out two at the same time, because I'm assuming that Steve Cole is reading there is his customers right, which is they won't buy both at the same time. What they'll do is buy one now and buy another in a few months' time or next month, that kind of thing. In which case, it makes no sense to put them out both out at the same time if most of the players that are going to buy the product are going to do it one and then the other at a later date.
Oh, by the way, I should note that the two counter sheets that are going to be in tactical operations, Tango and Oscar, from what I can tell, there's going to be three copies of Tango, I think, but only one copy of Oscar. So part of the decision-making to this point has been making sure that the ships that are going to be in Tango are going to be the ones that you want multiple copies of, and then the ones that are in Oscar are ones that aren't necessary for multiples.
Understood. Yeah, the one thing that I thought was interesting, which is he's saying he talks about the FNE product has to finish until the counter date, since we won't have the counters until then. That doesn't mean we can't goof off until does not mean we can goof off until the 1st of April, then do two rule books really fast. But he said does mean that they might have time for small projects during those 8.5 weeks. That i.e. ACTA reinforcements one or Starfleet tanks. Actually, to me, Starfleet tanks looks like an interesting game. Because of it, I'm wondering how he's going to do it. Because I understand. Yeah. Gary, remind me, Starfleet Tanks is basically supposed to be another board game, correct? And not
I'm
just.
I'm not too familiar with that one, actually. Okay. But I do know that there are a few tank miniatures that have been added to Shapeways lately. But can be used in Starfleet Marines as well. So they don't have to be. They don't have to wait for the new game to be used.
Oh, agreed. The only reason I mentioned that is because of if it's a new game, the question is, what's the difference going to be between Starfleet Tanks and Starfleet Marines? Because Starfleet Marines has tanks and armor personnel carriers and all those mobile units in it. Is it just going to be that the whole idea that the Starfleet Tanks is that it's a focus on tanks versus a focus on the Marines and those kind of actions? And if that's the case, how are they going to represent infantry at all?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know that there's other game systems like BattleTech where you've got the zoomed-in version with the record sheets where you've got like the individual boxes for various hit locations and so forth. But then if you play Alpha Strike, which is the more zoomed out version, you just have circles representing the armor and the exoskeleton, but you don't have the actual location hits, because I guess the onus in classic BattleTech is on like a lance versus lance, or if you're a clan, star versus star, whereas if you're playing Alpha Strike, the onus is on like a regiment or a company at least, or if you're a clan, like a cluster, or I guess if you're really crazy, a galaxy. So I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see what they have planned for the tank game.
Agreed. So that would make sense. Meaning, what I was thinking of is basically, since in Starfleet Marines, tanks and infantry are really abstracted out. They're just numbers. Yes, they have different. The way they take damage and the way the interactions are laid out between the two when it comes to attacks and defense and all that kind of thing. It's possible Starfleet tanks is basically more of a, it's like playing Starfleet Battles or FedCom, where you actually have a little more detail on the tanks itself instead of just being numbers, you know. Okay, different uploads, which are good to hear. Okay, R4T has slipped to the 18th of February because Sean needs time to colorize the 80 SSDs. So they're going to be colorizing them. I know some people don't care about the colorization. They just want black and white.
Well, usually on things like Warehouse 23, they give you the option. So if you want to stick with the black and white ones, you can. But the color ones, they're not quite the same colors that you see in Federation Commander, but they're more kind of bleached out equivalents. So you're almost like, I wouldn't say half a way towards a ship card. You're like a third of the way towards a ship card.
Right, right. Yeah, well, the big thing with ship cards, of course, is the background image, which is actual ship, you know. Okay. Steve Zamboni was mentioned that there's still two missing Archaeotholian battleships SSDs in the Payne's Crown. Needs a couple more. Which is always interesting.
He's the one who's been doing the various Tholian miniatures on Shapeways.
Oh, okay. It's been a while since I've actually been introduced to those guys, because when they first added the Shapeways counters, they went crazy with Shapeways counters. Miniatures. We had basically introducing all of the sculptors, and Steve Cole, when it comes to the announcement of the Shapeway Minis, which was actually that was a good podcast. I think a lot of people enjoyed that, and I got to find out certain things, not as much as I really wish I could have found out, but some of the crazy things like and it's not, this is just because of their independent sculpture people, and they're not all hired, or you know, they're not employees of ADB, and that is, they all use different products for creating those minis for Shapeways, which is, I find interesting, just because of, you would think that there'd be a single product that would be recommended, even maybe just by Shapeways itself, to say, okay, you should really use this product because that gives us the best results, that kind of thing. But I know, I'm not sure if those sculptors have changed their products since they originally started, because I know one of them was using like Google Sketch, I think SketchUp is the product that they were using, because it could do 3D, and there were other ones, they're using other ones for 3D counters. I mean, the 3D minis for Shapeways.
I recall that there's been a couple of cases where I think, like say for example, they needed Klingon engines for the sculptor who did the Fudar and Wind ships, mm-hmm. and I don't know if they had to redo them or if they were able to import the ones that had been done for the Klingon ships.
Right.
But then vice versa, I think that Will McCammon said, now, if he's listening, I apologize if I got this wrong, but I think he said that, like, for example, when they did the miniature for the OK-6, mm-hmm. he had to basically redo the Orion Raider cruiser design and then merge that with the D7, with the D6 secondary hull. Because the version that had been done by, I think it's Chris Nazepak, I think he's the one who does the Orion ships themselves, mm-hmm. that file format wouldn't work with the software that Will McCammon was using. So,
which is the big, see, if they were one shop, they were all hired under one, a single company. Normally, those are the kind of things that you say, okay, this is a tool we use so everyone can interact with each other, you know. But, you know, because of the way ADB is doing it, which is, you know, single people, and they let those people use the product that they're most familiar with using, you know, which makes sense. You know, the only time is when you have to have any kind of collaboration between multiple sculptors that they can't, because of the file formats might not be accessible or import, you know, one can export it using one file format, but not be able to import it in another product using that same file format. You know, I'm not sure if there is even a common file type, you know, that you can export to so that you can import to any of the products that are used, you know. Okay, I was just reading one thing that Steve posted, which was that he wanted to comment that R4T and R4J could both be sold close to counter day, which is, I think that would be April 8th, plus or minus 10 days. Since they are less expensive products than the F&E things, agreed there. However, the exact timing will be set by the staff meeting in late March, once we have a ship date. So, just allow people to know that we might be getting it on April 8th, but at the moment they're not quite sure. It's not until they have the staff meeting next month will they actually know or have a good idea of when they want to ship that out. I'm sure they'll have a nice discussion about timing and. I would hope by March that they'd get at least an idea from the printing company about, you know, where they are, where the printing company's in the process at that point, after they've had the product for like a month. You know, how long is it gonna take them to print it? You know, it's a lot of work. I know when it comes to printing counters, it's a lot of work, because you have to do initial printing just to test and make sure that your process works fine, you know, before you actually go in a full run, you know. So when it comes to those test runs, there's always a question in my mind, which is who pays for it. It's resources that have to be used, and the question is who pays for it. Is the printing coming, or is it added into the cost of the printing for the company that they're doing a printing for? So.
Well, at least the handy thing is if they put the PDF up first and allow people to pick through it and make sure that you know, any errata can be fed in before an actual print run is done, it means that by the time the counters come in and the cover gets ordered as well, then things have kind of coalesced to make the products like better out of the gate.
Right, or I think more to the point that giving the PDFs that people can look at and examine, they can actually do better quality control when it comes to what the actual counters that get sent to the printer are like, and hopefully they can fix any of the, you know, whether it is the numbers or, you know, the silhouette, that's the term I'm looking for, the silhouette, make sure that's correct for the ship that's being posted, or possibly, you know, the I said, the numbers or the designation or whatever else is on the counter sheet, for that counter. Make sure that those all were checked and double checked and triple checked, before they actually send it to the printer, in which case the question at that point is, what do you do? Do you eat as ADB? Do you eat the cost and just, say we have to do it right? Or do you tell players, here's an errata that goes with that counter sheet. If you want to, you can correct them by hand, or whatever, or just saying these numbers are wrong and we apologize for the error. What do you do at that point?
Well, I think that only really matters with the F&E counters, and that's why they're the ones that are getting reviewed on the BBS as we speak, the SFB ones.
Yeah, but you can still have, the designator is on the counter and also the silhouette. And if the silhouette doesn't match the counter designation, that's a problem. Now, obviously, you can get away with it. If it doesn't match. The silhouette doesn't match the counter designation, but at the same time, you don't want to have that happen. Okay, that would be. I can't wait to that. That'd be neat. Which is, I'm rereading some of the schedule updates, and one of those is FedCom Dragon's Attack.
I'd rather have a Juggernaut module myself, because especially with all the Shapeways Juggernaut miniatures that there are now, then you could easily do an e-pack with all the Juggernaut Empire ships that have SSDs and Starfleet paddles and do an FC pack out of them.
There's mention here, of course, the FENCOM becomes Gunboats Attack, X-Ships Attack, which should be interesting, and Fighters Attack. He said, I'm pilling with all three. I could reasonably hope to see a PDF of one of them, one, not all three, but one of them, on sale by summer. That's always I know we discussed about it before, which is the gunboats attack issue, which is tough.
They did do sample gunboats. I thought it was just now on CL 54 because there were sample X ships in a previous captain's log.
Right.
So there are playtest rules out there for people to check out to see what they think of them.
Oh, yeah, but remind me, because I did not read this, and I figured you might have already read it, which is, when it comes to gunboats, do in FedCom, do they have warp booster packs or not?
Not.
I didn't think so.
1/8.
Okay.
And interceptors, they don't have warp booster packs either, but they have a move cost of 1/16.
Actually, they did interceptors? I'm surprised.
Well, they haven't said if they're going to actually be in the formal product, but on the what used to be called the communique, the hailing frequencies extras, they call it now, you can actually see a sample ship card of a Romulan Decurion interceptor. So you can just see how it's put together. It's pretty basic, no booster packs, and it just has what it has, and that's pretty much it. So
The only reason I say I'm surprised at all is just because of, when I think about FedCom, has basically the latest and greatest of those ships with all the refits and so forth. And the interceptors basically were an intern step, a test platform for what became PFs, basically. That's why I'm surprised they even did the interceptors at all.
Well, bear in mind that the interceptor kind of lays the groundwork for the Andromeda mobile weapon platform. So if they ever wanted to bring that into as part of the gunboats attack material, then it's most likely going to be more like an interceptor than a PF.
Yeah, you got a good point there. Good point there. That one still
Although there
doesn't.
are conjectural Andromedan PFs in Module C3A, but since they only exist in the simulator, I wouldn't expect to see those in FC anytime soon.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. Yeah, the one thing that still doesn't. Fighters attack. That. No. No. I just think that's a bad idea overall. Just because not all fighters are created the same, and a lot of the toys that SFB has to defend itself against fighters aren't available in FedCom. So.
Well, that's why they cut back significantly in terms of like each empire is going to have pretty much like one type of fighter, like and you won't see things like the F-111 or the A-20, and so in terms of what the fighter can do, like it'll be much more streamlined. So I mean, I'm not massively sold on them, but at least they're being done in a way that won't be too imbalancing. Well, I hope anyway.
That's a hope. We'll have to wait and see. Okay, with that, I think we will wrap it up for this evening, since it's getting late and I need to get this thing all together and get to bed before I turn into a pumpkin. Well, Gary, it was a pleasure having you on. It was nice to talk to you since it's been so long.
And you, and hope that Barry gets well soon, and
Me too.
that everyone in the ADB, communities managing through the current circumstances the best they can.
Okay. Well, you take care and stay safe.
You too. Have a good night.
Okay. Bye. So, had a nice little discussion there about the different new products that ADB will be putting out. Also, the updates to those products. Keep an eye out there, and hopefully I can keep an eye out on those things on the discussion board and hopefully report back, weekly on if there's any progress at all. Obviously, we got this the minis. Which I mentioned in actually in the news portion of this podcast, for those of you who actually listen to the podcast and not looking at the YouTube video. So, I'll give a report a little more on what miniatures actually were released this month. A quick rundown. I'm not going to review them. Obviously, as you can tell, I liked the way the Hagarian Hilgarian? I think I got the right ships look. I think they're kind of cool. Definitely a different design, which is always nice to see. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.